You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, a podcast made possible by The Local's members. We're taking a deep dive this week into the Swedish school system with the help of our guest, journalist Emma Leinze from the Sydsvenskan newspaper. In the first part of the interview, we heard about how the system works and how Sweden performs in an international context. We're going to hear now about why Sweden's schools are so segregated, why girls do so much better than boys, and what Sweden should do to address some of its most pressing challenges if more children are to succeed at school. I'm Paul O'Mahony, and asking the questions with me were The Local's Emma Lövgren, Becky Waterton, and Richard Orange. Thank you, as always, to all members who support our independent journalism. If you're considering joining, we'd love to have you, and we'll add a link to our current offers in the show notes. Now, let's listen to the interview.
You've said in interviews and articles that Sweden has a school system that's rigged for failure, where 1 in 10 girls and 1 in 5 boys in Sweden fails to graduate from 9th grade. Hmm. And then 1 in 3 fails to finish gymnasiet, which is like upper high school
secondary
education.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think so many children fail to graduate, and what could the consequences be for both them and for society as a whole?
Well, if we go to the consequences first, our former Prime Minister, Magdalena Andersson, who's also a finance minister during a long time, she said that the biggest risk for the Swedish economy and for the Swedish welfare system is that we do have so many people that are not educated. We have 1 out of 10 who never actually graduate from any more than the grundskolan, the
primary school.
The primary school.
Or we might say,
yeah, the ninth
how
grade.
How old are you when you're in grundskolan?
Yeah, when you're 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is very much. We have a lot of, when they come out and look for a job, they have very big difficulties in getting something to live from. And if they can't support themselves, it means that society has to do it. And it's a big problem that they do. And we do have strange rules saying that if you don't have good enough grades when you finish primary school and go on to secondary school, you cannot go on. Mm. You are not allowed to go on to secondary school. You have to stop. And there is no alternative for what you can study then. Mm. So it's not strange that people who have bad grades, they don't get as much education as they could have gotten with other rules. Mm. So, of course, it's a big problem that a lot of students don't make it in primary school. In the Swedish system, we have, when it comes to give special help, special support to kids, we tend to wait for a very long time. In Finland, for example, they give like special support when they're in the first grade or second grade. They get support before they even understand that they are actually lagging behind. But in Sweden, you wait and wait and wait and wait. And it's partly because of saving money, which is going to cost a lot in the end. Also, it's part of that, what we were talking about before, you don't give special support because you think, oh, let them be kids for a little while more. So there it turns out to be a bad thing, not recognizing that they need help to learn something now.
Mm. My understanding of the grade system is that you have to, which I compare strangely to how it is in the UK, is that you have to pass everything to move on. You can't be someone who's like a genius at maths but rubbish at languages, which is how a lot of students are. A lot of students are, you know, arty but not sciencey, or sciencey but not arty. And the Swedish system seems to reward people who are a little bit good at everything. Am I right about that? So maybe that's a misunderstanding.
Yeah, you have to be good enough in a lot of different subjects. to be able to move on. You have to pass in like 8 or 11, depending on what kind of education you want to move on to. But if you fail in, for example, maths, that's a definite stop. You can't move on from primary school or when you finish 9th grade. You can't move on to a secondary education.
It's strange because, as we all know, there are some people who just can't do maths but are, you know, fairly bright.
My dad, he grew up in the 1930s and he came from quite a good home, so he was always treated with respect by the teachers, but that was not the case for everyone. And he remembered that the teacher once told them in like out loud in the classroom that the only people here who are going to move on to the next level are Börje Löfgren, my dad, and Lennart Andersson or something. The rest of you could try to find a rat hole to crawl into.
Oh my God.
So maybe it's got a bit better than that.
I think that's slightly improved.
Can you tell us a little bit about your latest book? Because I think it explains really well how the system has become so segregated.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about these features of the system before. This school choice, for example, has made Swedish schools more segregated than actually the society as a whole is.
Yeah.
So different residential areas makes a lot of the segregation, of course, but then you add on with a school choice and independent schools that makes the segregation between schools even bigger. Paired with the fact that we have had a lot of immigration during the last many years, has turned out that we have more and more schools where we have a lot of kids from low-educated families who don't speak Swedish at home and who don't have jobs. They go to certain schools, and those schools, they have a bad chance of succeeding from the start, depending on the family they come from. But they also tend to go to schools that actually are worse off when it comes to being a good school. They don't have as many educated teachers. The staff starts and stops, and they're new grown-ups all the time. The turnover of the students are also very high.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to learn. So it's changing all the time. So they have their background. They come from a weak background, and they go to a school that doesn't work as good as other schools. And then, of course, they get a lot worse results. And this is what we see to a larger and larger extent in Sweden. So the difference between schools has been growing quite rapidly for the last 20 years. And this is one thing we see, what you talked about, Emma, when you talked about pearls, that we see that we have a lot of readers in the fourth grade who are as good as they have always been. And that is very good compared to other OECD countries. But we also have a larger and larger group who are really bad readers. And so this is a result of this school segregation, I would say.
And is that linked to school choice?
Well, yeah, it's a part of it. Because when parents choose schools, they tend to choose segregation. And it's not only well-educated parents who want their children to be with other children to well-educated parents. It's also low-educated immigrant families. They want to have their children in schools where there are a lot of other families like themselves.
Yeah.
So they all make together, they make a more segregated system. And the school system is not made, it hasn't got any breaks, nothing to counter this segregation movement.
Yeah, I mean, what I find really interesting is that we have free school choice. You don't have to pay anything to go to school. So in theory, we should have less segregation because you can just go wherever you want to. But as you say, that's not what happens. I went to a free school at Gymnasiet, and we were a pretty mixed group of kids, but you could definitely see the signs of segregation there in that we all came from homes where we had, you know, parents who perhaps had an education themselves or were very involved in our education. But do you think there's anything that Sweden could learn from other countries when it comes to fighting segregation? I'm sure there are a lot of listeners right now who have thoughts on this because they all come from different countries. But what do you think?
Well, I'll come to that. But I will start to say that in this system, it could be less segregation. It hasn't. It has been the opposite. And that is partly because of the features that I was talking about in the start, where you have the schools that try to make it as cheap as possible, they can make a lot of money because they get a voucher for every child And if it doesn't cost, if they don't spend all that money, they can have a profit. So they don't spend the money on the children, but they do get the money. So what do they do to earn as much money as possible? Well, they try to get the cheapest children to educate. And the cheapest children to educate are the children from well-educated families, because they will succeed in school even though they don't have like educated teachers, for example, or they don't have a good schoolyard to play in. They will succeed anyway. So that is what a lot of independent schools do. Their task is actually to find the cheaper students. So they are telling parents, like, if you are an ambitious parent with an ambitious child who is good at learning, you should go to this school. Do you really think, do you want to do something more than a normal school do? Then you should come to our school. That's the kind of students that they earn money to have. They are also encouraged to increase the segregation. It's a drive that the schools also have. So I would say if you would, as a school system, work against segregation, you could recognize that the school choice system that we have in Sweden could be changed so that it is not as segregating as it is today. Of course, you could still have school choice, but in another way.
I guess it's a bit of a brain drain as well. If you don't have the well-educated parents with the kids that get help, when it means that the students left in the municipal schools are the ones that are weaker kind of from the start. So you need the most help, which means that the gap between their kind of basic level and the level that they can achieve is larger than it would be if you had like a mix of students from different backgrounds. So it means that the municipal schools have worse grades because they need to put more effort in to get their students up to those levels.
Yeah,
when you
at least some
skim off all the cream of the of the kids that are easy to educate.
Yeah, but if you, for example, if you go to municipal schools in an area that is well off, everybody wants to go to the municipal school because it's considered a good school. So, yeah, but some municipal schools are the losers in this system.
But someone has to educate the weaker kids as well. You can't just not teach them because they're
That's
worse
the task
off.
Of the school system. Yeah. All children should have as good an education that is as good as possible.
Yeah.
So that is the problem, of course, when the children are more and more divided into different schools.
Are there other countries with a free choice system that are succeeding in combating segregation?
Well, you do have in systems like in England, for example, you do have independent schools there. I think it's called, I don't know the term. It's called
charter schools.
Charter schools.
Charter schools.
Yeah.
I think they're called free schools in England.
Those who are free for everyone to go to. And you have the same kind of schools in the United States, for example. It doesn't cost anything to go there. You can choose it, but it's independently run. And they must have a good mix of the students when it comes to socioeconomic mixture.
Yeah.
So that's the work that they have to do in like England and the United States, but they don't have to do that. They don't have to take that into consideration in Sweden. So that would be like a thing that you could say that when you do distribute the children, you have to take this into consideration.
I heard an interesting interview with you where you spoke about, I think you had spoken to the head of the Academedia school chain, which is, I think, the biggest school chain in Sweden. Is that right?
Yeah.
And he was talking about this kind of idea, but he was accused of Stalinism.
Yeah. The question of a non-segregated school has become in Sweden has become a very left-right kind of question, or some want to make it a left-right issue. Mm. And those who would like to make the system a bit more like school system in the rest of the world, they say that this is not a left-right issue. It's a question of, you could say it's a very classical liberal thing to wanting to have the same chance for every child to have a good school, and that the system we have now actually works against that goal in many ways.
Mm. You've mentioned as well that it's hard to get qualified teachers to work at schools in vulnerable areas. Why is that?
Because I guess that as a teacher, you want to teach, And in many of those classrooms where you have a great many pupils who can't speak the language properly, who do not have families who are actually used to schools or education, it's very difficult to teach.
Yeah.
You do a lot of other things. It's more like a social worker, maybe, than teaching. And that is when you have a lot of kids with very large needs, you get that situation. And then it becomes more difficult for the school to find teachers who are willing to come there and teach.
Didn't Malmo do a bit of that? Didn't they give extra money to attract people to the troublesome schools and also give more money, take money from municipal schools in good areas and give it to the struggling schools? What have some municipalities done to try and attract teachers?
They do give more money to struggling schools and schools in vulnerable areas. And they also get teachers in those schools are also more paid. Turns out, not enough.
Really?
Because they still have a very difficult to find educated teachers. Sweden is really bad off when it comes to this, because when compared to other countries are actually better off in, how do you say, distributing well-educated teachers to all kinds of schools. In Sweden, struggling schools have a much smaller amount, lesser amount of educated teachers than other schools. So only paying teachers is not enough. And it turns out when teachers talks about what is wrong with my job, what am I not pleased with, of course, pay is one thing, but most of all, they want to have a good chance of making a good job. That's the important thing. So what they have done in other countries, for example, it's not only giving them a higher pay, but they also say, okay, in this school, you don't have to teach as many students. You have smaller classes. You have fewer students. You have fewer teaching hours so you can prepare better. That's a recipe for success. Didn't but you, we say, haven't done that in Sweden.
Didn't Macron say they would halve, I don't know if he ever did it, but he was going to halve class sizes in vulnerable areas. That was that was the French idea. But it's interesting because my wife's mother was a teacher in the 70s-something, and Rosengård Skolan was like famous across Sweden as this progressive, exciting school to teach in. I mean, couldn't they motivate people like that to say, you know, this is a massive thing for society. You know, you can come and solve the segregation problem. You know, couldn't you?
I think Rosengård Skolan is doing quite well, isn't it?
It is now, actually. Yeah, it seems to be. Yeah, it seems to be.
And that's in an area classed as a vulnerable area by the police, right?
It is, yes.
It's at Område.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still like half of the students in that area that, or in that school, who don't have grades enough to go on. So it's still, yeah, they might be doing well with the students they have, but the students they have are very, they have a very much longer way to go to be able to move on in the education system. It's another kind of job in those schools, and many teachers avoid going to those schools, avoid working there. With smaller differences in between the schools, it would be, of course, an easier job also to distribute teachers, to attract teachers to work in all kinds of schools.
But there's also the problem with getting teachers, full stop. I've seen recent figures that show that 3 in 10 teachers at Swedish schools are not qualified teachers. I know one of the teachers' organizations has predicted that Sweden will be short of 37,000 teachers by 2035. Why is there such a teacher shortage in Swedish schools?
I think a lot of teachers are not satisfied with their working conditions today. I think that answers a lot of that question, that they are very much controlled in what they do and how they do it. They feel that the things that they learn, the skills that they have from this long teacher education, it's not used, really. That they are mistrusted. Very many people choose not to become teachers, and educated teachers choose to work in other areas.
Is the focus on, like, I know I mentioned teachers' qualifications in my question, but is the strong focus on that part of the problem? I mean, there are plenty of people who aren't qualified teachers in that they haven't started to become a teacher, but who are perfectly capable of teaching a subject in a classroom. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that would be, of course, a lot smaller problem if also the educated teachers wanted to be in school and teach, and if they had the time to do a good job, which is, they don't really feel that today. They feel that they use very much of their time in documenting things, making statistics, trying to please parents who wants special treatment for their own child. Because parents, as you know, they can choose to change schools whenever they want, and they take the money and go. And so it's important for the school, from a financial point of view, that they stay in the school. So the parents become more like customers. The relation between the school and the parents, I think that the teachers are not really the role that they are playing in that. It becomes a very difficult one when it comes to grading, for example, where everyone wants all the children to have really good grades. It's only the teacher who actually has to say, well, this child has not come far enough to get this good grade, for example. It's a lot of pressure in a lot of different ways on teachers.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So while we're talking about grades, the Stockholm School of Economics revealed last week that it's considering requiring applicants to pass an entrance exam because the level of grade inflation, as you mentioned, at some schools means that it can't trust the results anymore. How big a problem is this and what's the solution?
I would say it's a really big problem. It's a problem that is caused by this, that you do compete about the students, because you compete about the students to get the money for the students. And how do you compete? By giving good grades, because that's what everybody wants. Then you give good grades to children who has not earned it.
Mm. They're called glädjebetyg in Swedish. So like joy grades,
joy
I guess.
Grades. Yeah. And when they move on in the education system, that will be discovered.
Yeah.
And that's what Handelshögskolan has discovered.
Yeah.
And that means that children who go to certain schools and get a lower grade but can't get into Handelshögskolan or a good higher education because there is some student who has gone to another school and gets higher grades, doesn't know more, isn't better at the subject, but they have got higher grades. So they get the place at the higher education at the school. This is a huge problem.
Yeah.
And it is created by the fact that the schools are competing for the students. So what is the solution? You could, of course, make your own pass entrance tests, and like Handelshögskolan is thinking of. It's a very, very difficult and expensive way of doing it.
Yeah.
But you could also lessen the incentives for competing for the children.
I mean, what I find so frustrating about this debate in Sweden is that the obvious thing to do would be to have external marking of exams. Why are the schools allowed to mark their own pupils?
You could do that, of course. I wondered, could you have external exams in all subjects? If you would do that, you would do that in a few subjects like mathematics or English and Swedish. What would happen to the rest of the subjects? What would happen to all those students that are really, really good at certain subjects that will not be tested and that will not make any difference? It will make it a much more narrow education in the long run, I think. And maybe, yeah, external examinations is the most doable way of changing things right now. Maybe in the long run, I'm not sure that is the best way to take care of the problem.
Why can't you have it in all subjects?
Well, yeah, I think it's a very expensive system to do like that.
Also, it will only measure like how you perform on the exam and learning how to sit a test. And
yeah, you know, it measures
kind of
other
well.
Things.
It's also a skill. It doesn't measure how you perform in the classroom.
You can see when you look at higher education and who is performing well in higher education. In higher education, you can actually get into by your grades from the upper secondary school, or you can take a test, högskoleprovet, and get in. And you can see that those who have taken the test, they perform a lot worse. They drop out much more often than those who have good grades. So grades, they tell something more about a student than only what they have as a knowledge. Mm. They say something about how willing is this person to work hard, for example. And that is very important if you want to complete an education.
So it's a more sort of holistic result if it's something that's done gradually over the years.
Yeah, grades often show something what you have done during a long period of
time.
But is there not also a potential for bias though? Like not just in kind of giving high grades to the kids that you think deserve it, but I mean if you have a student who behaves badly or a student you don't like for a particular reason, is there not kind of a worry there that the teacher could end up thinking, oh well, they're not that good, you know, I'll give them a lower grade? But if everything was, I remember when I came to Denmark, I did my master's in Denmark, and I was shocked that like you had oral exams that you sat down in front of the teacher and they just gave you a grade straight away. Like this was coming from Edinburgh, where you have an exam number that you write on every exam. It's completely anonymized. Your teacher has no idea who's written each exam. And I was just like, but what if she doesn't like me and gives me a bad grade? Like it was a big worry for me.
But there is no, you could say that external exams together with grades, for example, could be some kind of solution. It could be something you could do.
But isn't that what we kind of have with Nationella Proven, the national tests?
We do have national tests in some subjects, yes. But a lot of schools give higher grades than the national tests show.
But maybe those students actually deserve higher grades because the grades are based on their entire performance rather than how well they're performing.
Well, so that can actually, of course, that could be, that is a, that it can be a good compromise.
It just seems like there's no perfect system. I want a perfect system.
The important thing is that you should have a system that gives the incentives to give the students as much knowledge as possible.
Yeah.
And now that is not the case, really. So that's the main problem, I would say.
One of the things that's been in the news in the last few weeks is the schools minister, Lotta Edholm, said, I think earlier this week, she's putting the brakes on the National Education Agency's digitalization strategy. Mm. There seems to be a bit of a backlash against the use of computers and iPads in schools. And why isn't she happy with the strategy that the agency had? And what kind of reaction has there been to her decision?
Sweden is one of the most digitalized countries in the world. And they have also had a strategy that says we are going to digitalize the school. And I think in some ways that has gone a bit too far when people think that this means that 6-year-olds have to have computers. It means that you don't have to learn to write in hand, but you can write on a computer instead. You could say that this is a misinterpretation of how it was meant to be. But it has turned out you draw it a bit too far when you say that you don't have to write in hand, for example. It is just as good to write on a computer. The important thing is that you write something. Yeah. So I can understand why she's trying to stop it.
I mean, there's something that, that I've been, as a foreigner, again, I've been a bit shocked by the fact that my children haven't learned to write by hand. And when I tell people about that, they always like to think that I want them to have like really neat cursive handwriting. But I don't mean that. I mean, they can't write by hand at all. They can't write. They write each letter laboriously, slowly, like they're five, even though they're 11 or 12. And in the UK, they're at the same level as my niece, who's four or five in the UK, when my daughter's 11. And I find that really worrying. And it's been in the news a bit recently with Paulina Noding. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, what does the research say on the handwriting debate?
Well, it says that if you write something in hand, you remember it in another way than if you write something on the computer. It is written in your brain too. Mm-hmm. So it is worth something more. It's not two equal ways of writing. It is a fact that some students have very much difficulties in reading and writing. Of course, then maybe it's a good thing is if they also can have digitalized ways of helping them to read and write. Yes. But basically, letting students writing on a computer, it has been something that you, to high extent, has let everybody, all the students do that. I think you've lost a little bit the acknowledgement that it actually, writing by hand, for example, you remember what you write in a better way than if you write on the computer.
Yeah, I mean, I remember this myself. Like, I went to university in 2012. So, like, I went from high school, I wrote everything by hand, had a big folder full of hole-punched pages. It was all, like, separated by subject. Then I went to university, bought a laptop with my summer job money just before going to university, and then, like, found it so hard to remember anything because I was just typing everything. I felt it so hard to get organized and all of this. And I really noticed that with, you know, you write something down by hand and you remember it. I still remember these handwriting classes in primary school. And I think it is something that digitalization isn't necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. It's just, you need to kind of, it's not either or, you need to use it in the right ways. Like, again, my daughter, she's been learning colours and stuff, and there's some really good apps for, like, education for young kids, but that shouldn't be the only way that she learns, you know? It should be movement, it should be kind of flashcards, whatever, writing down, drawing.
And this is something that Swedish teachers has been saying for a long time, that digitalized learning is good. It's good. It's good to have in some ways and for some students, but I, as a teacher, have to be able to decide when we will use it and in what situations. And I think a lot of teachers have felt that they have been pressed to use digitalization or digital
tools.
Hjälpmedel tools. Yeah. To a much higher extent that they think is good for the children.
It also provides a barrier between you and the teacher. Like, I remember, you know, it's very easy to just quickly check an email while someone's holding a presentation or to do something else. You've got a screen between you and your teacher. Your teacher can't see what you're doing. But if you're sitting there writing something down, then they can kind of, you can't just start drawing something or like getting your phone up to send a text message or something. Your teacher knows that you're focusing on the work. They can kind of, I think it's a lot easier to get distracted if you've got a computer in front of you. You've got the access to the entire internet.
Well, they've got games. They just go on and they play this mega spell, which you go on the internet and you can just access a game at any time you like. So as soon as they get their computer, they're like playing games, and the teachers, very hard for them to stop that happening.
Big mirrors behind the behind the students so they can see what they've got on their screens.
Is that what you do in our editorial meetings?
I'm afraid so.
You also mentioned in a previous book that girls are massively outperforming boys. Can you tell us what you learned there and why it's an issue?
Yeah, this is an issue not in only in Sweden, but in the whole Western world.
I've heard this in the UK as well, even when I was at school.
Yeah, that girls perform better and they are, more importantly, they are more educated. They more often go on to higher education than boys. It's not an issue that a lot of women are well educated. It's an issue that so many men have a really bad education or have a really low education, because traditionally it's the man who is supposed to be the working guy in the family. The breadwinner is supposed to support his family and so on. So when this traditional view of being a man meets this situation where many men find themselves today, when they have a bad education, they don't get a job, they can't support anyone, not even themselves, drives us into a more insecure society, because a lot of men who feels outside or feels not part of the society, they turn to be like, well, criminals, gang criminals, extremists in different ways, net haters, and so on. So a lot of things that the politicians today are talking about as very big problems in our society comes from this situation where this picture of what a man is meets the situation that many men find themselves in today, because it's two different things. So, yeah,
does anyone have an idea as to why? What is it about schools, the way the school systems change, that has disadvantaged men? Or were women always kind of more academic and just they were, it was because we had a less gender equal society that you couldn't see it?
For the last many decades, women have outperformed men in the education system. And it's not only in Sweden, it's in many. So it's over a long time and it's in many different school systems. So I don't think you cannot say that this is something that shows in this particular school system and in this particular time. So this is something we can see. But what we have seen more and more over time is that more and more women, they do get a good education. They can pay for themselves. They are independent from men. And that makes it an issue. That's difficult for many men to accept, that they're not needed anymore.
I think also even though Sweden is extremely gender equal on a global level, women still take kind of more parental leave. Women are more likely to vab, look after their children when they're sick. So I think there is still a kind of, women, I can't remember the figures, this is just off the top of my head, but women still kind of lose out in terms of years spent paying into a pension or, time spent outside of the labour market. You still kind of use more time out of the labour market. And when the other partner in a relationship, if we're assuming, if we're taking heterosexual relationships as a kind of basis here. Yeah, I think you would then have an issue there that kind of the economic slack can't be kind of covered in the same way. In a way, if you have a heterosexual relationship and you've got a man and a woman, the man earns a bit more, the woman's out of the labour market, you still have the same kind of economic situation. But then when men are earning less and then women are still out of the labour market, everyone's worse off in those relationships. Mm. So it's also an interesting issue there, that just because women are doing better doesn't mean that families do better because of it, because women still have these other issues with gender equality that play in.
Mm. Yeah. Most of the countries are still it's a very big difference between men and women. It's big inequality between the genders. But human beings, they react a lot stronger on losing something than on winning something. And that's, I think, what we're seeing, that men, I don't talk about all men, but some men feel that they're losing something. And that is a much stronger feeling than women that are actually,
gaining something,
going about with their life and getting an education and starting working. You feel that's quite normal. That's what you should do. But you have a group of men who think that, okay, this is not, I deserve something else because I'm a man. And because that's what we say, that this is what a man should be. I should do something else. I am not performing my life as a real man.
Ideally, it would also be equal. It would also be nice if everyone was succeeding at the same rate.
Do you think it also, the way education worked has also changed a lot, I think. When I was at school, it was more based around, competitive exams and, you could be lazy all through the year and then ace your exams at the end of it by just sitting down and cramming in a short period of time. And now it's much more on coursework and doing a more steady thing. I think does that suit maybe some men worse? That it's more you have to have a steady performance over the whole school year rather than, just kind of waking up 2 weeks before your exams and cramming.
I think the skills that we tend to teach young girls like being diligent, conversation, being able to relate to others, skills that are valued a lot more now than they maybe were a few decades ago in the education system and in work life and all of that. So it feels like it all kind of boils down to how we raise our children.
And that's true.
Yeah, I heard you before, Emma, in another interview, you referenced a survey where girls who didn't do as well as they expected were asked to explain it, and they blamed themselves. They hadn't worked hard enough. And boys who were asked the same question blamed everybody else. They blamed the school. It was external.
There's also a difference between the genders when they are asked, how do you get good at something? And the girls tend to answer, I get good at something by working at it.
Yeah.
And the boys tend to answer, I am good at something because I'm talented. And that's what we, and that's in some way what we teach them. I mean, that's what we show boys and girls different things. And then they tend to think different things about themselves. And that gender difference, of course, when they come up in the education system and have to work more for their grades, for example, that can explain a little bit, I think, of why men then fall out more often.
You think you're just not good at something. You don't think that you can work hard.
Well, if you think you're talented and that's what makes you good at something, then what you do or not do does not matter.
Yeah.
Your
if
work
you're not
does
talented,
not matter.
Then you can't do anything about it. Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Is this any more extreme in Sweden than elsewhere, or is the line kind of the same, the graph?
We belong to the more extreme countries, but when you look at the Western world, like the United States, the United Kingdom, for example, we are at about the same level when it comes to more women graduating in higher education, for example.
Yeah.
Like in Sweden today, it's 2/3 of all graduations in higher education is done by women.
Wow.
Really?
That is shocking.
God, that's amazing.
And that is, in the OECD as a whole, it's 60%. So it's the difference is quite big.
But not being as not having as high an educational level doesn't stop men being dominant and trying to control all the conversations and lead everything.
Yeah,
generally.
We still have, I mean, men still have better pay, for example.
That's shocking.
Because it's a traditional thing that you, jobs where many men do, they are better paid than, for example, working in kindergartens that usually a lot of women do.
You've just been listening to an interview with Emma Leinze, a journalist with the Sydsvenskan newspaper and the author of several books on the Swedish school system. Our sound engineer on this podcast is Rhys Edwards. I'm Paul O'Mahony, and we'll be back again on Saturday with a regular episode of the podcast. Until then, take care.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.